I don't know what's expected of me this hour, but I guess that's in keeping with the role, because you never know what to expect out of an editor anyhow. I have been mixed up in journalism ever since I was in grade school. I never intended to be a journalist, but I got saddled with editing a high school paper. And then I worked part of my way through Abilene Christian, writing sports stories for the Abilene Reporter. And then I got connected with the Optimist and got kicked out of school for an editorial I wrote in it in 1933. And so I have been associated with writing. I guess I was born with printer's ink genes or something. And when I became editor of the Firm Foundation, I fell into it backward. I had no desire to edit anything. I had written a daily column in a newspaper for 12 years, and Brother G.H.P. Showalter had married a woman whose family lived at Cleburne, and so he visited us often. And he kept at me to come and help with the Firm Foundation, and I kept turning him down. And finally, after his death, I happened into the office one day to pay a courtesy call on the Showalter children, most of whom worked in the foundation office. And this will never get recorded in history, I'm sure, but this actually happened. Two men were talking with George Showalter about the future of the Firm Foundation. And one of them said, "Now, to make this paper survive, we'll have to have an issue." But he said, "We can provide the issue." And I nodded at George, and he's the only living person that could confirm this. And his memory probably would fail him. I motioned to him to the back, and he came, and I said, "Have you hired an editor for the Firm Foundation?" He said, "I've just about made a trade with these two men out front." And I said, "Have you traded with them yet?" And he said, "No." I said, "Is that job still open?" He said, "It is." I said, "You've just hired you an editor." And I took the job when I didn't want it, because I saw the paper going a direction I couldn't live with. And I learned a lot about editing the first week I was editor. This is a symposium on editing a new paper, and I'm not off the track. I think this is germane to the thing I'm trying to get at this morning. I never had an enemy in my life, so far as I know, till I became editor of the Firm Foundation, and I inherited a whole parcel of them the first week. And I found out that if you're going to edit a paper, the first thing you're going to have to do is grow a skin about a half inch thick. Get a hide as tough as a rhinoceros. Because people have absolutely no scruples at attributing most anything to you and calling you most anything in the world. Well, that's, I guess, normal with the trade. I've talked to other editors, and they've all had the same experience. It's kind of like being appointed an elder. You can be a pretty good guy till you get selected as an elder, and then they declare open season on you. And that's the way it is with editors. And you know that's not all bad. I'm not whimpering over that. It's toughened me, and it's gave me some backbone I didn't have. And it has been a blessing to me. I'd rather have one good enemy than 100 well-wishing friends. Because they do more to keep you straight, and they do more to make you examine your own conscience, and make you do more to weigh the motives by which you do things than anybody else in the world. My critics have done me much more good than my well-wishers. And so I don't resent them. I have been endowed by God Almighty with the ability to let things wash out of my system. I don't hold grudges. I don't remember the people's names who cancel their subscriptions or write mean letters. I don't keep any briefcase full of files on anybody, and I'm a little suspicious of anybody that does. And I find out that the sooner you can take what's good out of those criticisms and use it and apply it, and the sooner you can wash out the rest of it and forget it, the better off you are. And the only way I've been able to live with my own conscience as editor of a paper magazine has been to practice that. I am thankful for the capacity of forgiveness or forgetfulness. And there are some people with whom I violently disagree as to what they write or say or how they act. But I hold no malice against any one of them. I feel free to criticize them. If I want to, I feel just as free to let them buy my dinner. I feel perfectly at home with them. And some of the strongest opponents I have had have been some of my closest friends. And I thank God for that capacity, because I think it's important for any editor to have some of that trait at least, and I think it's important for our brotherhood and for the future of the restoration movement to have some of that capacity among the editors of our papers. And through a set of circumstances there's no use to repeat, I resigned as editor of the Firm Foundation when it sold to another group of men. And I was at the point where I sure didn't need a new job. I was so far behind on my fishing that, there wasn't anything particularly wrong with me that a lot of fishing wouldn't cure. But I didn't have any trouble finding things to do. I find out that when you retire, that's really when you dig into it. Isn't that right, Fred? You get busier than you do at any other time. And so I had more to do than I could do. There were 8 different groups within 2 months of my resignation who came to me asking me to edit new papers. I was approached by the owners and controllers of, I'm almost afraid to say this, but it's true, of every large paper in our brotherhood, bar none, to edit those publications, and I appreciate that. And I had no trouble turning them down because I'd had my stint at it, and I was satisfied with the job. And I find out that the time to quit is at that point where you're pretty well satisfied with what you've done. And within the first year, that 8 grew to 17 different groups wanting to start a new paper. I told every one of them the name of every other group that had approached me and ask them to get together and pick them somebody with still some years left and start them a paper if they thought there was a vacuum and fill it in the way they thought. I didn't succeed in getting any two of those 17 groups to come together. I knew they were my brethren. Finally, Alton Howard came to me and he said, I have some funds and I am ready to start a new paper. I don't want a fighting paper. I don't want something to add to conflict among our people. Alton is one of the finest spirited men you ever met. And he said, would you edit it? And I said, no. And told him why, and he came back to me three times. I tried to help him put together a team of men who would do it, and that didn't gel for various reasons. And finally he came back on the fourth occasion, and he said, would you do the editorial work if you didn't have to do anything else? And I told him I would do that at least until he saw whether it would get off the ground or not. And so on that basis, I assumed the editorship of Image Magazine. I had, 5 years earlier, assumed the editorship of the World Bible School newspaper, Action. That's my first love. I'm doing more good with World Bible School than I ever did in my life in any other way. It's given me more personal satisfaction. And all those big figures you see are not plucked out of the air. I mean, we are absolutely baptizing more people than we're telling you about. And that thrills me. And it furnished me, the reason I'm telling you that, is that the experience I have had editing Action contributed something I didn't have enough of in some other fields. It gave me an optimistic confidence that we can do anything under heaven we want to do and set ourselves to do. And every time something would come up that just couldn't be done, why, it happened in spite of us. And this work gave so many little folks in the kingdom a chance to blossom. That thrilled me. I've always been the champion of the underdog, I guess. I've supported some of our brethren who have gone haywire long after others have dumped them, simply because I don't see any sense in dumping them. And I do see some sense in holding on to them and keeping the communications open. And they're my brethren, even though they got in a pig pen and are eating with the hogs, they're still my brothers. And I still respect them as my brothers. And this avenue of action, the very name of the paper appealed to me. It was a can-do sort of proposition. And this is a can-do work, and little people in the church are blossoming out and doing a work they never did in their local congregation. I've just gotten out of the car. I was almost late. I've gotten out of the car from talking with a woman in her 80s who has 1,000 World Bible School students, and she showed me the list of those in that number that had been baptized. That's a thrilling thing. And so that was enough of an editorial responsibility without taking the second one on. And I am not worth anything now to either paper except just simply to edit them And that amounts to determining the direction they go, largely. And I feel like I maybe can still make a contribution in the direction at least two of our papers go. And so I have that task. And that is all introduction down here. And then that launches me into what I want to say to you about starting up a new magazine. Some of you are budding journalists. Some of you have ideas of making your mark in the journalistic world, and I wish you well, and I would encourage you every way that I can, because if there is anything our brotherhood needs, it's good, clean, wholesome, positive journalism. I'll tell you, you don't realize the power of the press. 20 years ago, I was making trips down through Central and South America and was in the printing business, so I looked at every newspaper stand on all the streets, and Latin America is full of street-side newspaper stands, and those racks were all full of communist literature. I mean, the whole newsstand was given over to communist literature. Somebody was pouring billions into Latin America. Now, 20 years later, we got revolutions everywhere those bookstores were. And my thought is that the books on those sidewalk newsstands had more to shaping the destiny of Central and South America than all the parliaments that have ever met and all the armies that have ever marched. And I don't think it is too much to say that the newspapers and the magazines of our brotherhood help to shape the policies of the brotherhood more than the pulpit does, and more than the eldership government of the church does. Really, our form of government has not done much to shape the policy of a brotherhood. And strong personalities in the pulpit have done some more, but the thing that's really shaped the direction and the policy of our brotherhood of people in the last 100 years has been its publications. We have become what our publications were back in the early days. Somebody mentioned the heretic detector in the speech last night. I have some copies of that old paper. And I had a cousin who edited a paper in Comanche, I believe it was, or Cisco, back in the 1880s and 90s. It was called the Eye Opener. And it really was. It could take off the bark at 100 yards. Burnett's Budget and some of those old papers, they made a scrapping, fighting bunch out of us. And we took it out on the denominations as long as they would ante, and when they quit, we begin to take it out on each other. And we have inherited what we've got largely because of the shape of our brotherhood created by the papers of 50 and 60 years ago. If that be true, the only hope we have of changing course is to change the tone of some of our brotherhood publications and to change the tone of our literature. I have no objection to the existence of papers that differ radically with me in their approach. I don't want editors telling me what to think. And for fear one of them does, I take nearly all the papers so they can all tell me what to think. And I reserve the capacity to sift every one of them and pick out whatever nuggets I find and throw the most of it away. And I think you have to have that attitude toward journalism. I remember hearing somebody say, I wish we just had one paper. and that every church in the Brotherhood took that paper. And then the editor of that paper could tell us all what to do, and that would cure all these schisms in the church. Yeah, and make a bunch of clones out of the rest of us. I don't want any elder, editor telling me what to think, or any group of elders, editors. I reserve the privilege of doing my own thinking. Influence my thinking if you can, but don't cram your thinking down my throat. I want to do my own. And I think God created you a free moral agent and gave you the brain you've got so you could exercise it. And I believe that the safety of the restoration movement lies in every one of us doing his own thinking and not swallowing the thinking of a few editors or the views of any one paper. You know, we got to the place a few years ago where I could listen to a college preacher boy preach a couple of sermons and I could tell you which paper he subscribed to. And that isn't wholesome. That's not good. We get to where our thinking is frying pan shallow and we let somebody else do it for us. And let me tell you, if you get to the point where you get all your thinking strained through my mind and out of my paper, you're going to be the loser. I don't aim to strain my thinking through anybody's mind. And I reserve the right to be wrong part of the time. And I am not ashamed to be wrong, and I am not afraid to be wrong. Neither am I afraid to turn around and back out of a dead-end street I've gotten into either. And I think that is a wholesome attitude, and that ought to be the attitude toward our papers. We don't need a bunch of infallible editors telling us what to believe. And so I think there is safety in a multitude of papers. I think each one of them is a check on the other. And I think these checks and balances are good. What I'm trying to say is that we must keep our minds open to different channels of thought and the existence of a number of papers representing different channels of thought are strengthening to all of us. Now, in this kind of atmosphere, this new magazine Image was born. I have no objection at all to a paper that's primarily a first principle paper. I have no objection to a paper that is primarily a warmed over sermon paper. I have no objection to a paper that's rabidly anti or moderately anti, because I think we need some of them. They keep us shipshape. They keep us thinking. They keep us straightening up our course and evening our balance. They're good for us. And so I am not in competition with any of them, but this new paper, I think occupies a sort of unique ground. We began to hunt for a name, and I didn't like the name to begin with that it now wears, Image. But as we began to talk it and plan it, many people like the idea of producing in us the image of Jesus Christ. And when you come to think about it, not many of our papers do that. They argue the issues, don't they? And arguing the issues do not necessarily produce the image of Christ in our lives. And we've become, in the eyes of the world, a kind of shallow sect, long on liturgy and long on law-keeping, but real hollow when it comes to producing the fundamental principles and characteristics of Jesus Christ in our own character and everyday life. And so starting a paper with its main aim and purpose to produce the image of Christ is not a slap at any other publication. I'm thankful right now that the editors of some of our largest papers are close friends. Furman Curley has been a close friend of mine ever since he taught school in Freed Hardeman College. Howard Norton has been ever since he graduated from high school. We are the closest of friends. We share many of the same ideas, and we have some different ideas. And we try once in a while to convert each other. But I think that makes a statement that is wholesome for our brotherhood. At least we're developing a kind of phalanx of strength down the middle, neither rabidly to the right or to the left. And standing pretty well together, I think, is a good sign. But image doesn't occupy the newspaper field of the Christian Chronicle, and it doesn't fit exactly the pulpit-oriented style of the Gospel Advocate, and both papers have their place. We have tried to found a new paper attractive enough for you to want to give to your neighbor. Attractive enough to make a good handout. In other words, we want it to say something to the non-church world. We want it to be a door opener. We're trying to increase and not restrict communication. I think we're getting so inbred that we are isolating ourselves from our mission field like a pearl is isolated in an oyster. And we're going to keep shrinking up if we do that. We're going to have to open up broad, wholesome communication with a lost world. And so the very layout of Image Magazine is designed to say something to the people that are not us. Now, their needs are about the same as ours. We got marriage problems, they got more of them. We've got sin problems, they got more of them. And there are some universal wants that don't stop at the borders of the church. And we're trying to address those wants and needs in Image Magazine, and we're trying to get away from the sectarianism we see developing in us. This is not an indictment. I'm trying to assess a condition that I think is existing among us, that we are making a denomination out of the church when we vehemently are preaching against it. We're isolating ourselves instead of reaching out. We have become self-serving and self-centered in our needs and in our operations. We're putting our money on church houses and parking lots and cushioned pews. Pews are made to sit on, and that's about all we ever do with them. It's a church house. And so we, without realizing it, we're drifting into this sort of a mentality. And somehow, we're going to have to reach out to the world and let the world know that we do care. That the people of Jesus Christ care like Jesus Christ cared, and that we're willing to go, if necessary, to the extremes he went to save those people that don't care. And so we're trying to develop a magazine that will produce in us the image of Jesus Christ. Now, that's an image nobody can fault. That's an image that even an atheist would find it hard to differ with. And we feel that this universal appeal of image will have an wholesome influence on us to turn us back from narrow sectarianism and divisive infighting. And at the same time, it'll have an appeal to those people who have never known what it would take to relieve them of their world of misery and woe. And so we're trying to develop that kind of magazine. It's got a lot broader base than any magazine I was ever connected with. It addresses a lot of areas that I've never seen an article in any of our papers on. And we have plans for that broad spectrum to continue. We try to put in it something for women, something for young people, without segregating them into sects of their own. Something for church leadership, something for evangelism, something for people with problems. In every issue, we try to address. Indicating that we occupy a different field from most of them. Now, we always get our papers branded. I could name a paper, any paper, and immediately there arises an image in your mind, and it's branded in your mind. This is an anti-paper. This is a fighting paper. This is a loving paper. This is a unity vehicle. That kind of image raises in your mind, don't you? Doesn't it? We want to try to avoid this. I said last night at a luncheon that it is really a tragedy that our huge brotherhood right now is held just as much in the grasp of about six men who are, in my opinion, journalistic terrorists. And we are their hostages. Elders are afraid of their shadow. Preachers are afraid. Members are afraid. We're looking askance at each other. We tend to people's business that's none of ours away off yonder. We jump out of the jury box and hand down our verdict just as soon as the prosecution has presented its case and before any of the defense witnesses have been heard. That's happened around here the last two or three weeks. We just got all kinds of brethren who are gung-ho to turn in their verdict when they don't have but one side of the evidence. And what's happening is that we are developing a sick condition among us. We have become the hostage of a little clique of not more than six guns, followed by a second escutcheon of Me Too people, clones. And that in itself is not a very big element, but it holds all of us in the grip of fear. It's a thing that must be broken down, or else our name is Ichabod. I don't care what else happens. And so, I want to work on that in image, just like I want to work on our divisive spirit. We're kind of like a bunch, tub full of scratching crabs, rather than a body of loving, joined together heart, soul, and mind people. Somebody's got to work on that. I'm not saying this to the destruction or the derogatory condition of anybody. I'm just saying that these are conditions we've drifted into, and we didn't drift into them overnight, and somebody's going to have to work on getting us out of that. And I hope to be able to do that in Image Magazine. I want to make one other point, and then I want to throw this open to your discussion. I'll field any questions that I'm able to. Image Magazine costs a fortune. Any paper does. The firm foundation, up to the end of my editorship, was exactly 100 years old. And it wasn't worth $100,000. It had been in existence all that long. It wasn't worth $100,000. David McQuitty is a good friend of mine, and I go at David's request to his home. I furnished David counsel for several years in problems the advocate has faced. And David tells me that in the history of the advocate, they haven't amassed $1,000 per year for the time they've existed in net worth. If you're going to start, if you're going to make money, drill an oil well. Don't start a paper. Papers are not a money-making thing. And I don't have any time for connection with a paper that has an axe to grind. I have time for a paper that has a cause. And I think this cause is a worthy cause. And it might interest you to know that during the first year of this paper, it will cost Alton Howard $250,000 out of his pocket. That'll be the loss of the paper the first year. And even with some of us working practically free at it, it'll cost that. It costs to mount a paper. I am encouraged. I made some circulation predictions when we started and hoped that the paper might be self-supporting in 5 years. Alton thought three. I am gratified that our circulation is now a little over three times what I predicted it to be at the end of its first year. And we're just 8 months old. So it's having a good reception, but commendation and words of encouragement are not going to pay for that paper. The only thing in the world that'll pay for it is for it to be circulated enough to sustain itself. The time will come when Alton can't stand something like that any longer. He's not the Bank of America. And you can't put out $250,000 a year on an idea and just keep doing it year after year after year. Now, it's fine to have one or two preachers and elders in a congregation as subscribers to Image Magazine, but that's not enough. We're going to have whole memberships of congregations getting Image and supporting it, each man to the tune of a year subscription, that little broad-based support, if we can develop it, we'll make action go. If we continue just to one or two of us in a congregation subscribe to it, it'll flounder along like 95% of our other papers have done for a year or two and we'll die. So it's really up to us, it's up to you and everybody else, whether we want it or not, or whether we even need it or not. If we don't, let it die. Let it die if we don't need it. But if we do need it, let's make it go. Now, I've said some things on my heart to you about the starting of a new paper, and I want to throw this wide open to any questions you may have to ask. I'll be glad to answer them, if I can. Anybody?
All right. I
purposefully don't keep up with it, but I can tell you it's well over 4,000. I don't keep up with it because if I did, I'd worry about it. And Denny Boltinghouse has the job of making it go, and I've never asked Denny. But I do know that my guess was that at the end of a year, we'd have 2,000 subscribers the first year. And we'll have more than three times that many before the year's over. All right?
In each calendar year, are you going to have bound volumes available like you used to have?
Now, it doesn't come in an elder's prerogative, an editor's prerogative to determine that. All I do is edit the paper. Denny is at the booth over right in the corner of the tent, in the northwest corner, and Denny can tell you that, but I can't. I purposefully don't learn the answers to these questions because I'd spend my time with them rather than some other thing. Okay, anyone else? I'm sure they will do that. I don't want to be facetious. All right?
What other limits are you accepting articles written by those other than your staff writers?
The only requirement I have for articles in Image Magazine is that they be better than a lot of stuff I've already got. That's the only criteria I have. I don't care who writes for Image. I'd pick up something out of a sectarian paper if it had a real good scriptural sound point to make that none of my brethren had ever made. And I welcome. I get a lot. I divide manuscripts three ways. One, those that I look at and see enough English grammar mistakes in the first two paragraphs to know that I'll never spend the time to correct this thing and put it in the paper. That class, I never read through the article. Then there's another class of articles that I will probably run if I'm ever running an issue dealing with this general field and I'm out of copy. And they're stacked over there. And then there is that stack that these are well-written, scholarly, good articles written from somebody's heart, and they're telling a story that needs to be told, and our people need to hear it. These I will someday run. It may be 6 months from now. So I divide my manuscripts into those three piles, and I edit out of this one. And I welcome anybody who has anything to say that hasn't been said 41 times before. I'd welcome any of you writing some and sending it to us. Incidentally, send it to West Monroe. Don't send it to me. Other question? Anyone? All right.
Brother Lemon, you have a wide variety of content in these publications. Do you have some categories that you carry in each issue, or do you just simply print what becomes available?
We set down about 15 different categories, and of course you can't get them all in one issue. And so we try to make two or three articles in one category in this issue and then skip to another category for some key articles in the next one. There you will find a general theme, but not every article in the paper will be on that theme. Just the key focus of the issue will be on about three articles in the same field each time. I don't know whether that's a good policy or bad. That just happens to be the one I'm using. All right?
Like your photographs in there, where do you get them?
We pick them up from everywhere. This is a kind of a crazy deal. The copy is sent to West Monroe. I get a carbon copy of it sent to me, and the original is sent on to Nashville, Tennessee. And a publishing company in Nashville, Tennessee lays out the graphics and makes a film and ships it to Dallas, and they're printed and mailed out of Dallas. All right.
Well, as a college instructor, I struggle with getting what do you think the long-term prospects are for 15, 60, 70 years out there for print publications among the church?
I don't think they're very bright unless we can turn some things around. I receive through the years many, many, many manuscripts. And people would say to me, how much royalty will you pay me on this manuscript? We never did pay a royalty because there wasn't any royalty in it. We lost money on practically every one of them. And the average church member that writes a book or a publication thinks, well, the magazine sell 10 or 20 or 30,000 copies. That's what my book will do. You know what your book will do? I don't care how good it is. It'll sell 600 copies in our whole big brotherhood. It'll sell 600 copies, 800 copies to begin with, never more than 1,000. And it may hit a sensitive nerve like Reubel Shelley's book, I Just Want to Be a Christian, did. 20th Sister Christian had to reprint it 3 times right fast. But that's the exception rather than the rule. And it's largely because most of our printing is amateurish. Most of our writing is amateurish. I would like to encourage dedicated college level writing courses that produce quality and creativity enough to till the material will sell itself. And we're going to have to do that among our people, I think, before we ever revive the publishing market. All right?
Brother Lemon, this is a different approach, but I see and have for years a tremendous weakness in the local work of the church. If you could turn the world upside down, there wouldn't be anything about it. If the Mormons or the Catholics sneeze, they get a headline. What can we do to correct that?
Send some students to journalism courses that learn how to write the stuff that the public will read. The reason we don't get in their papers is they're interested in stuff the public will read, and we're not writing that kind of stuff. When we begin to write the stuff that produces headlines, they'll start giving us the headlines. I think we'd better quit because it's 5 minutes till our hour. Thank you so very much for your patience. I hope I've helped some.
George,